The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, our weekly Monday visit with the one and only John Wilner, national voice around the Pac-12. There was big developments over the weekend. New television agreement with the Big 12. What does that mean for the Pac-12? What does that mean for you college football fans that are wondering, is this conference even going to exist? Was it a good deal? Was it a bad deal? The timing of it with John Wilner. That is coming up at 10:20. Barry Bloom is going to be with us with Sportico. Barry, one of the national voices around Major League Baseball. He is in Philadelphia for tonight's Game 3 of the World Series. And I want to talk with Barry. I'm imagining it's just beyond bonkers there. And of course, the Astros are going to show up and the Philly fans are going to let them have it for cheating back in 2017, even though it's 5 years later, they just won't forget. And I'm sure that Barry's got some interesting thoughts on that front. I also want to talk to him about Aaron Judge and his destination free agency and the Diamondbacks in the offseason. We'll have Barry Bloom with us as well. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Man, it was a busy weekend. Let's just work backwards. I wish that I could sit here on a Monday and talk about the Cardinals, whether they win or lose. Okay, I just wish that I could talk about them in a way that wasn't always so condescending. The very first play on offense at Minnesota, what happens? Penalty on the Cardinals. You had the muffed punt. You had Kyler throwing to Zach Ertz where he wasn't going to be. And there was the interception. You had Eno Benjamin on a block that came back and it was a clear penalty. Flags everywhere. You had the fumbled snap. You just had so much stuff. And I wish that I could just focus in on, you know, they lost in the last moment and it came down to this one play, but it's a combination of errors. Like you watch them and they're just not good. Good teams don't have as many mistakes as the Cardinals. And it's like a compilation of this whole year. 2022, if you know, they do the highlight video at the end of the season. And the highlight video has big ballsy music and everything's great. Everything's peaches and puppies. It doesn't matter if the team is lousy or not. Everything is awesome and amazing because you don't want sponsors to think people that things aren't awesome and amazing. You don't want fans. I mean, truth. Do a truth around the first 8 weeks of Cardinal games and all you're going to get is amazing touchdown calls, which is fine. It's fine. You can make things look a certain way when they're not. It's not doom and gloom, but you know, when you see the same movie over and over and over, this is the Titanic. I know how it ends. The boat sinks. And after a while, it just gets exhausting. It just feels like that whoever they're lined up against opposite them, it's always uphill. Another game without a touchdown on an opening drive. That's like 14. It's all the way back to last year. It's over a calendar year. I believe it's now a calendar year since they've scored a first quarter touchdown. And we're not going to sit here and say everything is peaches and puppy dogs and ice cream during the course of an NFL season. Yeah, it's pretty obvious this Sunday against Seattle is must-win territory. I get that. You should always win when you're at home. The fact it's a divisional game. The fact, remember at the start of this season, there's, oh, the Seahawks, they're going to be bad. They're not going to be good. Oh, man, this is our year. This is the Cardinals. This is Big Red, Red Sea and all that stuff. And you just get so tired. I get so tired of all the hype. I just want to see people go out and produce and put a product on the field. And when you watch a game, like even watching the 49ers and Rams on Sunday afterwards, and the 49ers, they decide we're going to go get Christian McCaffrey. It's fine. The Rams, Matthew Stafford looked better than what he's looked like the first few weeks of the season. That goes back to fake football in August and teams not ready to play. Now they're starting to round into form, starting to see how people are playing well, playing better in most places. Here, it's, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is beyond amazing. And yeah, the whole deal has been, well, we'll wait for D-Hop to get back and watch out, man. When that happens, we're going to be on fire. Well, you played a team that was 5-1, and you played them close, and close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, and you made their quarterback look like Carl Lewis in the 100-meter dash, you know, Kirk Cousins rambling, whatever term you want to use for a touchdown. It's just so hard. You just like to see a team go out and win a 20-17 battle. There's going to be mistakes. That's the game. That's the game. I like improv. I like watching improv Kyler. I don't mind improv Kyler. But they can't get out of their own way. And it falls back. You know, this is what the owner wanted. The owner gave the general manager an extension, gave the head coach an extension, gave the quarterback an extension. So, you know, the owner's got it figured out, right? So here we are, the team that's looking up. And if you go through the NFC and just start doing playoff stuff, which is what we do at this point in time of the season, it's a divisional game. There's going to be a lot of Seattle fans there. That's just par for the course here in Arizona. And you don't win that game, and now you've stacked another divisional loss. The tiebreaker is going to start coming into play the closer you get to Thanksgiving in the first part of December. And there's just not something that you can look at and say, wow, what a quality victory. What a complete performance from start to finish. Well, we've had injuries. Every team has injuries. Every team has injuries. I just want to feel like there's a level of competency, I think, when I'm watching a game. I don't know about you, but when I'm watching them play, and I don't go out to practice. Practice means nothing. I don't go sit in and hear Cliff, because Cliff doesn't say anything. We're in a day and age where everything is sanitized. You can go talk to assistant coaches and they'll tell you stuff all day long. That's fine. But that doesn't mean anything on Sundays. I've gotten to a point where in the circles that I'm in, the people that I'm with, they don't ask about how's practice. They don't ask about anything other than what happened. Well, let me tell you what they're working on. No, that doesn't work. When he fumbles the punt, that doesn't work in the fourth quarter. That doesn't mean anything in practice. Nothing. So it's just a bitterly disappointing weekend, can you tell? Meantime, our hometown heroes on the hardwood, Devin Booker celebrated his 26th birthday, went out, had a very good game. This is a point in time where the Suns play Minnesota tomorrow night. Suns are off, tied for their best start in the history of the franchise. There's more bad teams than good teams, so they should beat Houston easily. Tomorrow night will be interesting. I like Minnesota. I think Minnesota may actually be, I'll be interested to see how Rudy Gobert goes in there, even though DeAndre won't be on the floor with an ankle injury. Minnesota is one of those teams that you could see, I shouldn't say 1-8 in this new world of playoffs, but you may see that as a first round opponent for the Suns. I mean, D'Angelo Russell's a good player. Karl Anthony Towns is a beast. Gobert, Anthony Edwards, they've got some dudes. Like, Minnesota's going for it. And so I'm interested in that game tomorrow night. It's NASCAR week, which means you'll be seeing Devin Henry on the site. I think I'll have Devin on tomorrow's show to talk about the coming weekend. We're down to the final four. There will be, I think it's, what is it, 250,000 fans that will be out at the track this week. I don't know Sport of Speed inside and out. I know that I love talking to drivers. Devin knows it inside and out, so I'll have Devin on tomorrow. The early returns on the Coyotes games, they had two at the Mullet over the weekend on Friday and last night. It's concerning when I see online tickets available for Florida tomorrow night. I know they're pricey, but the place holds 4,600. You can't get 4,600 people to show up. What else? So over on the college end, I'll take some time here on Arizona State. Jordan Hamm went to Colorado this weekend. He actually went up last Thursday, and he went down to Colorado Springs, tracked down the top high school quarterback in the state of Colorado who's committed to the U of A. It'll be a nice piece in the TV show this week. It'll be a nice piece on the website. Good content there. He then went to Boulder, and he and Jake Plummer got together. Jake, of course, it's always good to hear from Jake. There's some thoughts from Jake on Sean Aguano that I'll let Jordan share in his piece. And then he went to the game on Saturday night. So he accomplished a lot. And you're going to see a bunch of it on the site here in the next couple of days. In terms of the game on Saturday night, you have to remember, these are not Sean Aguano's players. He inherited this group. And I haven't sat with Sean and said, okay, tell me about this guy, this guy, this guy. If you could remove some players or what positions. I'm not going to do that because he's the interim. He's the interim. I can make my observations. I can see what's going on. Clearly, if you beat UCLA this week, I wouldn't be surprised if he beats UCLA, just on what I'm hearing, if the seniors don't decide to go directly to Dr. Crow and say, what are you doing? This is our leadership group. UCLA is going to be ranked in the CFP this week. And I don't know the last time that happened. I'm going to talk to Wilner about it here in a couple minutes. I don't know the last time the college football playoff had UCLA in it. Oregon, USC, UCLA, Utah's two losses, they're out. But I really think ASU can get UCLA this week. I do. I just don't know if they have enough defense. That's been pretty obvious in Watson. I'm not breaking ground here. But this is, you know, this is what you have in a coach who's fighting. I call him the fighting iguanos lovingly. I like to see the grit about him. If he had played Borgay against Stanford, we probably would be talking about another win. But that's behind him. Made a mistake. You only get one bite at the apple. He screwed up there. I think he's done a lot of positive things outside of that. And U of A, as expected, I sat in here and watched U of A against USC. And, man, U of A can't stop anybody. They're entertaining. They cannot stop anybody. That's a hard watch. The baseball playoffs into the World Series, first couple of games. I watched the other night as Verlander was up 5-0. I'm out, click, and then they come back and they win. So they play tonight. And I wish to God one last thing on the college end. I wish to goodness that the Pac-12 had a little bit of SEC in them. So here's what's happened today in the SEC. So Mississippi State fires their athletic director. No, I'm sorry. Auburn fires their athletic director. The athletic director at Mississippi State says, well, I'll take that job. So it'd be like the AD at U of A coming up here if Ray gets blown out or when Ray gets blown out. And so the first thing that this AD does in coming over from Mississippi State this morning is he fires the football coach, Brian Harsin, who's going to get fired. And then to put a cherry on top, Auburn plays Mississippi State this Saturday. Imagine all this stuff going on here between like U of A and ASU. Like AD leaves, fired, opposing AD takes a job, fires a football coach in midseason, and then they play each other. That stuff doesn't happen here, unfortunately. But in the South, man, let's just get out of the way and let at it. Good story there. All right. More college football with John Wilner on the other side, and then we'll go to Philadelphia, Barry Bloom. I'm Brad Sussmat. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is the Iron Man. He doesn't screw up. If this show is screwed up, it's on him. No, I'm just kidding. He does great work. We're back with John Wilner next. All right, as promised, I've been looking forward to chopping it up with John Wilner because I know that his weekend was completely trashed when the Big 12, for some reason, decided over the weekend to get it out there. They have a new TV deal, of course, Wilner Hotline. You can find his content on the website. You can find his podcast, Canzano Wilner Podcast, which is terrific stuff there. Deep dive within the Pac-12 every single week. All right, I'm going to throw the softball up to you, partner. When you heard the news, you saw the numbers or the reported numbers of the Big 12 TV deal. Is the Pac-12 going to lose people? Is this the end or, you know, this is all right? Where are you at on it, John?
Well, I think you can make a case that it's good for the Pac-12 or that it's bad for the Pac-12, right? It's hard to come to a conclusion at this point. I think we'll know more in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Certainly, the deal averages 31.66, 31.7 million per school over the course of the agreement. That's not big money that's going to get a Pac-12 school to say, oh my Lord, we got to make that jump right now. I mean, there's a good chance, I think, that the Pac-12 is going to end up with a contract that is very close or even exceeds that number on a per school basis, right? So strictly from a financial standpoint, it's not transformative numbers. It's not going to, you know, cause schools to leave in the next week or two. But at the same time, it adds an element of uncertainty because here the Big 12 now, they have got something firm. They can basically waive it to any Pac-12 school, especially the four corner schools, right? The Arizona schools, Colorado, Utah. If you're nervous about the future of the Pac-12, if you think that Washington and Oregon are desperate to leave for the Big Ten and could do that at any moment, well, there's some security. The Big 12's got a contract. They can offer you a written deal, and you know what you're getting. You know how long it's for, so you have that security. And in that regard, I think it adds a little bit of uncertainty to the Pac-12 situation.
Did it surprise you that they would get out in front of this during the season, John?
No. I mean, given the comments from their commissioner, Brett Yormark, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, it seemed like they were moving towards an early agreement. Now, their negotiating period wasn't supposed to start until the spring of 2024. Basically, they cut this deal a year and a half early, and they did it because they wanted security. You know, things are crazy. This locks in their schools, so their schools can't go anywhere. It provides, you know, something for them to dangle in front of the Pac-12. It gives them security. And for ESPN and Fox, you know, they're getting the Big 12 at a lower price than they would if everybody waited a year and a half to start negotiating, because the value of sports is only increasing.
Right.
So it didn't surprise me. It surprised me that it happened yesterday morning at like 6:45 a.m., but not that they got it done in this window of, you know, weeks.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, tomorrow night's the first CFP rankings. Where do you believe the Pac-12 schools, Oregon and USC, will land tomorrow night?
Well, I think Oregon, USC, and also UCLA. You know, if you've only got one loss, you're in the mix. Probably in the 7 or 8 range to 12, 13, somewhere in there, right? The Oregon story is very interesting because if you eliminate that 49-3 loss to Georgia, Oregon is playing like a top 5 team, a top 6 team, right? But to what extent is the committee going to hold a 46-point loss against the Ducks, right? And I don't know the answer. And it will be interesting to see where Oregon falls, I think, in relation to other SEC teams, because that is one potential roadblock for them. If they finish with one loss and they're the Pac-12 champs, but there's an SEC team that has one or two losses and lost a close game to Georgia, it's going to be hard to put the Ducks in losing 46 to Georgia over an SEC team that lost by, say, 10 or 14 to Georgia.
Sure, and you're going to have the Michigan-Ohio State game, which will figure some things out. You have Tennessee-Georgia, which is going to figure some things out. So there's still some games. But the Pac-12 just has to simply go about their business and win games. And that to that end, we look ahead to this weekend. You have Cal-USC. You have UCLA against Arizona State this weekend. And I look at the two LA schools and their matchups, and on paper, they should just come in and take care of business. Do you see it the same way, or chinks in the armor at UCLA, or they should just roll over the Fighting Iguanos, as I call them over here?
I actually think this is an upset opportunity for ASU. Here's UCLA. So they get beat in a huge game by Oregon. Then they come back and they roll Stanford as they're supposed to. They're going to be in the college football playoff ranking, I think, for the first time. Maybe they were in it for many years ago, but for their current players, this is going to be a brand new feeling, sense of euphoria this week that they're in the mix. And ASU at home, you know, they've got enough players. I think depending on how Arizona State's quarterback plays, I think ASU's got a real chance for an upset this weekend. It's just a gut feeling, and it's the same feeling I had a couple of years ago when Oregon came into town, right? That was a better ASU team for sure. What was that, 2019, I think? But I don't know. To me, this is an opportunity for the Fighting Iguanos here.
You like that one. Speaking of the Fighting Iguanos, from a distance, I know that when you and I first spoke on it when Herm left, it was U of A would be thrilled if Sean Iguana was named the coach. Do you still see it that way, or are you feeling differently, hearing differently, seeing things differently as they unfold?
No, I think Iguana has done a good job, probably as good a job as possible under the circumstances with the personnel he's got and with the schedule he has faced, right? I mean, it's tough. You know, first two games, Utah and USC, right? But I don't think that there's anybody either at Arizona or in the conference that is going to start worrying if he's promoted ahead to the full-time job, right? Now, that could be a misguided sentiment on their part, but I think there are other coaches out there that would cause more concern across the conference footprint in terms of being able to someone who could finally maximize the potential that a lot of people on the outside see for ASU. You know, it's always been called that sleeping giant. I'm not sure I agree with that that statement. But certainly there's a lot there, and the recruiting in the Phoenix area is there's a well of talent. I think that there are other coaches that would cause more concern throughout the Pac-12.
You know, and just this last week, and I'll end on this, I'm just curious from your end, we were both hearing the same stuff this last week on Tuesday, that this was Ray Anderson's day, he was going to get fired and all that stuff. And it gets to a point where the president of the university actually has to weigh in on this nonsense, from my view, okay? If you're Kenny Dillingham and you're sitting out there, my understanding is his people talked with Colorado in person last week. So if you're Kenny Dillingham, why would you come here except you're from the Valley, and you're going to be the latest one that can get this thing figured out? And then there's even the deal of, Brad, they're just floating Kenny's name and Sean's name out there as possibilities because they have much bigger fish than these two guys.
Well, they may have fish. I'm still not convinced Ray Anderson is going to be the person who makes this hire. I'm not convinced Ray Anderson is going to be the athletic director when they do hire a coach. You know, that statement was – it was a supportive statement, but it was not exactly glowing, right? And there are a lot of issues. And I think they need to take a hard look at how they want to go about this process of hiring a coach and how the athletic department should be led into this next era with the NCAA situation. But if you're Dillingham, I mean, a lot of it depends on the contract that ASU offers you, right? I mean, who knows? ASU, if Oregon keeps rolling, maybe ASU comes at him and here's a 6-year deal, guaranteed money. We're going to put you in the middle of the conference in terms of salary, you know. And if you're Dillingham, you got, you know, a lot of, you know, personal reason to be the head coach at ASU.
Sure.
So we'll see. And you also have to ask, what big name is going to be interested in taking that job if you're working for the current administration? If there's no clarity on the NCAA front, right? That's a big deal. If they haven't heard from the NCAA, if they don't know what the sanctions are going to be, the candidate pool will be much different.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time and your insights as always, John. Have a great week.
Thanks for having me.
There's John Wilner. Find his content online, Wilner Hotline, of course, on sports360az.com, and listen to the Wilner Canzano podcast. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, let's go to Philadelphia. Barry Bloom is with us with Sportico. It is game number 3 tonight in Philly. If I would have told you, hey, by the way, Barry, Halloween, you're going to be in Philly, and they're going to be playing the Astros. And Philly fans don't forget. So I'm going to start with off-the-field stuff first. What type of scene are you expecting tonight around the ball game? You're going to play a game, I get it, but these fans and the history of the Astros, is this going to be on full display tonight?
Well, you know, the way Philly is, period. I mean, it's old and hackneyed at this point, but, you know, these are the guys who booed Santa. And, you know, there was some stuff in the ALCS about Yankee fans at Yankee Stadium booing a Judge. And when Aaron Boone was asked about it, he said, well, it's the Bronx. So you go, yeah, it's Philly. They booed Bryce Harper before he hit that home run in that series. If he didn't perform in a particular situation, there's going to, even though there's the Phillies and Astros really don't have much of a history against each other. You go back to 1980 for the National League Championship Series, when the Phillies came back in the ninth inning against Nolan Ryan in the Astrodome and won that series and then went on to win their first championship in history. You know, that's really the extent of it. They weren't plagued by the scandal and the sign stealing, but I'm sure they'll be on Altuve and Bregman and Gurriel just like everybody else's.
What's the city of Philly like? Because the Eagles are 7-0. I saw their MLS team is actually – made the finals. I mean, you're right in the middle of the hot spot of America for sports right now in one city.
Well, it doesn't take much, as you know. And, you know, Philly fans are really very much like, to me, like San Diego, you know, when the bus comes by and they're doing well, everybody jumps on it with both feet. Yeah. So, I mean, everybody's on it with both feet here. And the Phillies obviously are such a surprise. I mean, they're the sixth seed in the NL. They struggled to get to the playoffs just like the Padres did. Then the new season started and they haven't stopped winning and they haven't lost a home game. So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, the Astros are a very good team when Dusty isn't making his usual bad decisions on pitching. And, they're a time-tested weathered team. They've been in the playoffs a lot and the World Series a lot. So we'll see. It should be a very tough three games for the Astros here in Philly.
Let's go back to game one. Verlander's up 5-0. And I'm like, this game's over. And you've obviously been in many more press boxes than I have been. Did you feel the same way? And are you alluding to Dusty there a little bit with Verlander and what happened in game one?
Well, okay. So, you know, a friend of mine, we're sitting together in the center field ox box. And it's 5-0, and he turns to me and he goes, well, the only thing left here is like how long Verlander is going to keep this perfect game, because he went through the first 9 hitters of that incident and he looked great. And so I look at him and I go, well, you know what you did? You just jinxed the perfect game. Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we'll see. First, next inning, fourth, he blows up and the perfect game is over. The shutout is over. You turn around, it's now 5-3. So we're sitting there, and I go, if I'm Dusty, you got to get this guy out of the game. He's got a great bullpen. Verlander, I mean, and I asked these questions. I mean, here's a guy who pitched 0 innings last year and only a couple the year before, had Tommy John surgery and rehabbed. He had a great season, but now with all his postseason games, he's 190 innings in. Mm. Now, when you see the signs, it's time to get him out. Okay, so now he opens the fifth inning with a double and a walk. And it's like, okay, what are you waiting for? And then, of course, you know, he leaves him in and the inning's over and it's 5-5 and he lost any opportunity. So at that point, I say, you know, the teams change, the players' names change, but Dusty's managing is always the same. And I went back and did a historical look, which I may use somewhere along the way, especially if Dusty, they don't win, even if they do win. I mean, Verlander, it's like, this reminds me of Mark Pryor in 2003, Mark Gardner in 2000, Russ Ortiz in 2002. He put Smoltz in a game in the middle as a reliever in Washington. That blew up in his face. I mean, this is like complete history here. He just has learned nothing. So then the question comes, Verlander had never won a World Series game. He's 0-6 and 7 starts at that point. Now he's 0-6 and 8 starts because he didn't get the loss in that game. But you're thinking, well, is Dusty, I know how loyal he is he keeping Verlander in that game to get him through 5 innings to at least get him the win? So when I asked him that in the press conference the next day, he goes, I didn't even know he didn't have a World Series win. When I went home last night after the game, my son, Darren, the famous Darren from, you know, the incident at home plate in the 2002 World Series when he was a little boy and is now a professional player of his own right, he told him, and he said, that's the way I found out. So he didn't know that Verlander didn't have a World Series win, he says. But it's Dusty, and I believe him. It's just crazy stuff.
The Barry Bloom with us from Philadelphia. Game 3 is tonight. The other side of the coin, the dugout of Rob Thomson, what has struck you about him so far?
You know, what has struck me about him is that he's a perfect Don Brasky manager, you know, where he's smart, he relies on the people around him, he's calm. They much like, and I mentioned this in a story that's going to be posted on Dombrowski sometime today, is that, you know, when Alex Cora, who I've known since he was a little kid, was managing the 2018 Red Sox under Dombrowski, you know, I asked Alex, you know, how much interference do you have from the front office? Because the game had turned so analytical at that point. And he said, they just give us the information and let me manage. So then I asked Rob Thompson the same question, and he gave me the same answer. Hmm. And then I talked to Dombrowski about it, and he said, yeah, I hire these guys. That's their job. I put them in a position. Yeah, we give them the information, but when it comes to putting out the lineup or in-game decisions, that's up to them, which is so different now than what Dave Roberts and Aaron Boone and a lot of managers have to deal with baseball operations department around the league. So I think he was perfect. You know, Dombrowski said when they replaced Rob with, you know, replaced Joe Girardi with Rob, you know, they were 22 and 29. The team seemed to be floundering. You know, Joe wasn't communicating. And he said, Dombrowski said, you could just feel it. You could just see it. Mm-hmm. What was going on at the time that we needed to change? And did Rob, was he going to be the guy? Who knows? I mean, you know, he was an interim manager, and suddenly the Phillies struggled and made the playoffs, and they struggled. I mean, really, you know, I saw the Padres, the Brewers, and the Phillies the last month of the season, and they all looked god-awful. And it was like, this is the reason why you don't expand the playoffs, because you have three teams vying for the last two playoff spots who really stink. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Phillies catch fire.
Yep.
And here we are. And they take the interim off of Rob and make him the manager for next year. And, you know, God knows what will happen next year, even though this team does have a lot of talent. But he's really done a great job over there. And I don't want to take anything away from Dusty either. I mean, despite his moves, I mean, Dusty brings a calm. They love him there. You know, he's done a great job, you know, getting through the scandal. He doesn't have a contract. He or Click, the general manager, don't have contracts. You know, the owner told me, Crane told me over the weekend that he's defrayed that until after the postseason. And there's a lot of rumors that he's not going to bring back Crane. And if Dusty wins, he may retire. He's 73 years old. Or, you know, if he doesn't, he may want to come back another year. And that's all up in the air. But, I mean, really, you know, Dusty's been to the World Series two times in a row and 3 years here. In the bubble in San Diego, you know, they were down 3-0 to Tampa Bay, came back 3-3 and lost Game 7. So they were that close to being in the World Series a third time in a row. So I don't know how you can overall argue with the job Dusty has done either.
It's really interesting to put it that way. Before I get you out of here, I got about a minute and a half off-season stuff. Where's Aaron Judge going to land, and anything Diamondbacks that's interesting to you? I know the GM meetings are in San Diego, I believe, at the 1st of December. But anything with Judge, where do you think he lands, and the Diamondbacks?
I think with Judge, you know, I asked him that question personally near the end of the Astros series. His answer was, you know, I don't know. And so you could tell me, your guess is as good as mine. Hmm. So that's really where I am on it. I think your guess is as good as mine. I think a lot of this weighs heavily on what first offer the Yankees make to the guy, because clearly the $230 million offer they offered him at the end of spring training didn't hit it. He turned it down. I think he was insulted by it. The Yankees could have offered him $300 million and probably locked him up, you know, something close to, you know, $35, $40 million a year, and it just didn't happen. And then he went out and had a series for the ages going into free agency.
Right.
You know, I think the Giants are going to go heavily after him. I think that all the big money teams, Dodgers, Mets, you know, they're all going to go. Red Sox, they're all going to go and hike up the price. And in the end, I have no idea whether the Yankees are going to be able to sign him or where he's going to go. I think that he might wind up going to the Giants. But as I told some people, you know, executives, we talked about this, don't wish for something you might get it, because that right now, that's a very tough organization with the baseball ops the way they are, with Farhan and Kapler to play for. And, you know, they, you know, Kepler pinch hit for Longoria in the middle of a game. He pinch hit for Belt in the middle of a game. I mean, what is he going to do when a tough, you know, righty pitcher comes in? They're going to pinch hit for Judge. You know, you're putting yourself in a situation where, you know, you can lead the clubhouse and you're dealing with a guy who's like the anti-Boone, really. He's not very personable. So if he's up to him to take the money and go home, it's not like Bonds going there and playing for Dusty. This is like, you know, Kapler and Judge, and it may create a tough situation that would clean out the whole baseball ops department. So I don't know. You know, it really is a tough one. As far as the GM meetings, they're actually in Las Vegas next week. It's the winter meetings.
They're in San Diego in
December. And the Diamondbacks, you know, going back to, you know, a piece I wrote on them in September, you know, end of August, it all depends on how much money they have and how much they want to spend at this point. I mean, clearly, you know, they brought up a good core of young players. They were fun to watch at the end of the season. You know, as Torrey and I talked about, and he agreed, anything that happens in the second half of a season is meaningless. It doesn't carry over to next year.
Right.
You know, as he said, you know, April, May, and June is when you put on your big boy pants and play baseball. Those are games that count. None of these games at the end of the year counted, so it doesn't matter. What's going to happen when that all gets turned on? And what do they do to build around it? They need starting pitching. They need a third baseman. They need a bullpen. They have a lot of places where they have to go. And if you're going to go out into the trade market and start trading some of your younger players for more veteran players, you're going to leave holes. So, you know, they have their work cut out for them, as do the Rockies in that division, because as the Padres have shown, they spend money. The Dodgers are going to keep doing what they do. They spend money. The Giants, you know, will have the money to spend when they want to spend it in the right place. They're going to spend money. And they have it, and the Diamondbacks don't have it. So, and they have a stadium situation which is in flux at this point too. So I'll be very interested to see what they do in the offseason. But I don't see them getting that much better and being in any sort of competitive spot for one of those six playoff spots next year.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time for sure. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insights as always, Barry. Stay safe. Have fun tonight.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Brad. Always great to be on.
There's Barry Bloom, Sportico. You can find his content, and we're back with more after this time out.